Well, good morning. This audience more than most appreciates the challenges presented by Palmer Amaranth, including the robust nature of the females, the large number of seeds that they can produce, the fact that it's dioecious, we get a lot of genetic recombination. We've got a tremendous suite of genotypes that we're selecting from when we spray these seedlings. Early in the season, in our environment, in Arizona, hot, dry, Palmer Amaranth is native to the Sonoran Desert. It's tremendously competitive, as you can see in these shots of two-leaf cotton, where Palmer Amaranth emerged simultaneously with the cotton, and it's just ability to grow is tremendous. And that's true both with respect to cotton and with some of our other annual weeds like Ivy Leaf Morning Glory. Here's a shot of a Palmer Amaranth plant that emerged with cotton. This is about 10-node cotton under our good conditions. It's just a tremendous competitor. It is, in fact, the dominant competitor in our production systems. If we don't do anything to control it, it will completely eliminate cotton yield. Again, it's well adapted to our high temperatures, continuous sunshine, and it's got a higher water use efficiency than cotton does. I've watched with a lot of trepidation over the years as the spread of the occurrence of glyphosate-resistant palmeranth has been documented across the southeast. In 2007, a population showed up in New Mexico, three small populations in pecan orchards. That really gave us quite a bit of concern in Arizona, and I've been wondering all these years when resistance would finally show up in Arizona. We do a lot of things that are perhaps a little bit atypical. We traditionally have used a lot of herbicide mechanisms of action in our production systems, although in the last several years, growers have moved away from the DNA herbicides. Because of the nature of our irrigated systems, we still do a lot of tillage relative to other parts of the country. And given our environment and the crop mix that we can produce, we do have quite a bit of crop rotation compared to other parts of the country. But I finally got that phone call this last summer in July, went out to this field in Buckeye, Arizona, about 30 miles west of Phoenix in the West Valley, and I was really quite surprised to see the extent of this infestation. This is a quarter-mile irrigation run. It was just wall-to-wall Palmer Amaranth. Grower relayed to me that it had been sprayed three times with 44 ounces per acre of a Roundup Ran glyphosate. And I could find a few small carcasses out there, plants that had died at the time of with the first application of the glyphosate, but these plants were essentially unaffected. We sprayed a small patch of it with a 5% volume solution of glyphosate. No effect on the plants. This is another shot of the field. Not all of it was heavily infested, but really the density of the population was tremendous. This producer was utilizing in a scenario where we're growing cotton, two crops in a year, cotton and wheat double crop. In order to do that, you have to take tillage out of the system, go to no-till production practices. No pre-emergence herbicides were used in this field. And in the warm portion of the year, when Palmer Amaranth is present in the field, glyphosate was the only herbicide used for weed management. It was the only weed management tool. So if you were setting out to try to select for a resistant biotype, these were the practices you would pursue. I looked at a second field managed by the same grower and PCA a few miles to the west, and this is more what I would have expected on that first call out to a herbicide-resistant population, few small patches of Palmer in the foreground, but mostly isolated plants in the field. We sprayed this patch in the foreground with 5% solution as well, and these plants just no response at all. Appeared to be highly resistant. The first field I showed you is the one in red there where I've labeled it 2 to 3 years. Obviously, that population didn't develop that degree of resistance overnight. The second field that I showed you was the field the custom harvester went to after the first field was picked, illustrating some of the difficulties that I'm sure you guys are all aware of and have been dealing with for years. There was another field managed by the same PCA, different grower in Glendale, also West Valley of Phoenix. And in this case, the grower did not use a residual herbicide, and he thought he had a lot of escapes. Plants in the foreground were also sprayed with a 5% solution of Roundup, and they responded quite a bit. They didn't die completely, but I think that was mostly due to their size. We collected seed from all these two populations in Glendale and Buckeye, and also a third population from a known glyphosate susceptible population at Maricopa Ag Center. Cleaned the seed, planted it in small plots to do a greenhouse assay. They had a lot of difficulty getting enough plants initially because of seed dormancy. But then we were able to do the assays in the greenhouse. We sprayed Palmer Amaranth at the four-leaf growth stage. So they're about 4 inches tall in the greenhouse. They look pretty atypical, actually, in terms of plants from the field. Here's the results of the first screen we did. The red numbers on the front of the pots indicate the rate of glyphosate that was applied in that row of pots in pounds AE per acre. The front row is the susceptible Maricopa population. It's going downhill pretty quick. This is 7 days after treatment. The middle row is the Glendale population. Looked pretty similar to the Maricopa population. You can see that Buckeye population in the back appears to be pretty resistant to glyphosate. And you can see the plants over on the left there at the lowest rates were actually going ahead and producing inflorescences in the greenhouse. This is just the phytotoxicity data we collected from that particular experiment. Again, just emphasizing the tolerance of the Buckeye treatments relative to the Buckeye population relative to two other locations. We repeated those experiments over a wider range of glyphosate concentrations. And you can see the Glendale and the Maricopa populations, the light blue squares and the light green triangles, that as we increased rate, we got increasing phytotoxicity as we expected. The Buckeye populations out there at really high glyphosate rates were stunted, but we were not killing them. This is what the plants look like 15 days after treatment. The controls were over there on the right, so you can compare them to the different rates indicated on the front of the pots at the bottom of the slide. Pretty high rates. That 9 pound AE per acre rate, of course, is 2 gallons per acre, around a power max. Plants are stunted, but they're hanging on. We documented the degree of resistance both with plant height measurements, and the height of the untreated controls are shown by the horizontal bars up at the top of the graft compared to the treated plants with the symbols down below. So you can see the degree of stunning and also the number of nodes that these plants were produced. Essentially, when we sprayed, initially they stopped growing, but the Buckeye plants hung in there and eventually started recovering. This is a shot taken 29 days after application. And you can see that those plants have resumed growth. They're even producing inflorescences, pollen, and definitely got pollen production going on there in the greenhouses from these plants. And this just shows the increase in height of those plants between 14 days after treatment and 33 days after treatment at various glyphosate rates. And we see the same phenomenon if we count the number of main stem nodes on those plants. So, looking at the degree of resistance in that population kind of gave rise to the question of, well, where did that seed come from? And one way we thought we might get a handle on that is to test those plants for tolerance to staple, since ALS resistance is fairly common in some populations in the southeast. So we went back to the greenhouse, mustered enough plants, and was able to do a small experiment looking at staple tolerance in the Buckeye population. It did respond to staple. We compared it with the Maricopa population, the two rows that are labeled 2/10 of a kilogram AI per hectare. On the left is the Maricopa population, on the right is the Buckeye. That's a 2x rate of staple, LX. I was a little bit surprised the plants didn't respond more. I think that might be an artifact of the conditions inherent in the greenhouse, but nevertheless, the two populations look pretty similar. I wouldn't have none of the data that we collected indicated that it was the Buckeye population was any more tolerant of staple than the Maricopa population. So bottom line is, don't really know where that seed came from. Certainly with those conditions in that part of Buckeye, it's possible we developed this resistance population ourselves. The Buckeye population was highly resistant to glyphosate. The Glendale population was not. No evidence of resistance in that population. That was just a case of the growers treating too big of plants, and he didn't use a residual herbicide, so we had continuous emergence of plants. So where do we go from here? In Arizona, we get tremendous activity from the DNA herbicides if we apply them pre-plant incorporated. This is a picture of a weed nursery that I've got at the Maricopa Ag Center. And in plots that were beginning of the season, we did not apply Prowl preplant incorporated. If we apply Prowl or Treflan preplant incorporated, we get tremendous control of Palmer amaranth, better than 99%, as you can see in the plots here in the foreground compared to the background of the picture on the left. Most of the seedlings that you see in that plot are, in fact, I believe, Morning Glory and not Palmer. Tillage is still going to be an important component of our systems because of the irrigated nature of our systems. We have a pretty high rate of adoption of GPS, RTKS, auto-steer tractor guidance systems. And in order to make beds, we do have a pretty easy time. You know, we do tillage and we start clean. And if we can just keep a couple of cultivations in that system over the year, that will help quite a bit in terms of resistance management. The Liberty Link technology is another option for us. I'm just amazed sitting in the presentations that you guys can get control of 4-inch Palmer amaranth with Liberty. On the left is a typical response to a PowerMax application, Palmer amaranth 4 days after application, shown in the red circles in our environment. Over on the right is Palmer amaranth treated at the same time. Basically, we defoliate the plants, but those stems stay green, those plants regrow. We have to treat like 1-inch pigweed, and that's a tremendous challenge for producers. So it's a real challenge for the Liberty Link system. Definitely need to be using it with the pre-emerge herbicide, good spray coverage, not right nozzles, and all those sorts of things. We do see antagonism if you tank mix with Roundup. Going forward, our recommendation to growers is really emphasizing the sanitation, the zero tolerance attitude on all of our irrigation ditches, tailwater drainage systems, roadsides, etc. You have it. We need to stop seed production and pollen production. It's critical that we get the dinitrophenylalanine herbicides back into our production system, as has been emphasized many times. The glufosinate system can work pretty well for us if we use a DNA preplant incorporated. And we've also found the Staple LX is an excellent tank mix partner with Liberty. If we go 43 ounces of Liberty over the top initially and then tank mix Staple with that 29-ounce rate following, we can get pretty good control of Palmer. Kind of wonder about the long-term viability of Staple if we really start using it extensively. And then we are looking forward to some of the future herbicide-resistant cotton traits. Dicamba, I think, has a really good fit for us. With our hot conditions, high humidity for us is about 14% early in the morning, going down to single digits during the day. To this 2,4-D, even the 2,4-D choline formulations, I just do not think are going to fit. They still have too much volatility given the crop mix that we've got in Arizona. So with that, I'm through my slides, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if we've got any.
Have time for one question if anybody has one. Thank you very much.